You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Hi, I'm Ananya Cletus. I'm 17-year-old, and I'm a junior at the Upper St. Clair High School.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fargo. I'm 18 years old. I am a senior also at Upper St. Clair High School.
I'm Arwen Kozak. I'm 14, and I'm a freshman at Pittsburgh Kappa.
Today, we're going to be hosting an hour-long segment about social justice relating to Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, so we'll talk a bit about equal marriage rights, some violence, gender rights, and then social media in the civil rights movement.
I believe Arwen has a nice quotation from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to start us off.
I do. Okay. Change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle. And so we must straighten our backs and work for our freedom. A man can't ride you unless your back is bent.
So that quotation from Dr. King shows us how his lessons from 1960s are applicable today.
And I think something that I've noticed is, of course, today is obviously Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and everyone's excited, everyone our age, that, oh, we have no school today. We're all get off, we have a holiday. But I think people start to lose sight of what the day really means and what its significance really is as far as what Dr. King's impact was, not only on like previous generations, but on our generation today as well.
And like Ananya said, a big issue today that people our age face and the current generation, we're facing the issue of marriage equality and gay rights.
Yeah, I think a lot of people today are not really thinking about how Martin Luther King's theories about life can be applied to the struggles that people face on a day-to-day basis today.
Right, and back in the 1960s, the issues were racism mostly. Racism was rooted in America's culture since its inception, and today that dynamic is changing. Other issues are coming up. You know, back in the 1960s, marriage equality wasn't such a big issue. People weren't really talking about it, but today it is.
Yeah, because, I mean, in addition to prejudice by race, we see things like prejudice by religion, prejudice by sexual orientation, and a lot of things which still have the same underlying themes as what was going on when Dr. King was alive, but they sort of, like, changed and adapted themselves to the current issues that we're facing in society today. So I think his lessons and his meanings really stick on with us, even in today's times.
Right, in his speech at the Lincoln Memorial, his I Have a Dream speech, King focused on, you know, changing the status quo of racism in America. And today that status quo is maybe prejudice against gay people. And he showed that, you know, with some persistence, you can change the status quo. And I think that's a lesson that everyone could acknowledge today.
Definitely. And homophobia is associated today with the King philosophy that we have, and I think that definitely people can take things that he said about racism and apply them to any kind of discrimination, and a lot of people aren't taking advantage of that on days like today.
And the unfortunate thing is, though, even though we have moved on and we start to see other struggles and other biases in today's society, that I don't think we can actually say that we've eliminated all previous struggles that we've had. There's clearly still evidence of racism and prejudice by the color of someone's skin in certain parts of the world, certain parts of the country. And I think that's really something that we need to all push together for, that even years after Dr. King's speech and his movement, that I think that's still something that we continually should improve on.
Right. And Dr. King found power through numbers. I think the civil rights movement in the 1960s was very much a grassroots movement. He got the people together on a very personal level through sit-ins and bus boycotts and peaceful protests in small towns and also big cities. And a grassroots movement like that can be applied to many issues of today.
Yeah, I think Liz brings up a good point with the power in numbers, and that this is something that anyone can really take the opportunity to do. Like she mentioned sit-ins, so of course the classic example would be Rosa Parks and her refusal to give up her seat on the bus. And so this reminds me of Well, a couple of the youth reporters, we had the wonderful opportunity to attend the CMU Remaking Cities Congress a couple months ago, and one of the things that really stuck with me is that we got to hear from Mickey Jacob, the head of the American Institute of Architects, and something that he mentioned that really stuck with me was he mentioned an opportunity that he had to actually meet Rosa Parks in person. It was an opportunity that he won through some competition where he actually got to meet her at some kind of luncheon, I believe it was. And I think the thing that he said that really stuck with me is that she was just, in his opinion, just a frail, ordinary woman. But the fact that inside her, despite the way she looked, despite the way a lot of people would sort of run her down as being just a normal person, that she had the power and the strength to really make a change for her people and to sort of say no when someone asked her to give up her bus seat and sort of spark a whole movement.
Right. I think a lot of young people today particularly feel that maybe making a change isn't attainable or it's not something they can really do, but we can learn from Rosa Parks and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that, you know, change is attainable and one person can make an impact.
I agree. And I also think that the youth culture that isn't under that assumption is being very active in the civil rights community, that there's a lot of young people today who are taking it upon themselves to make a change. And I think that's definitely following the ideas that Martin Luther King had, that, you know, anyone can make a difference, even if it's not as, you know, colossal as he was. You know, everyone can help.
Right. I was just reading some news articles today and paging through Facebook, and I just noticed all the vast amount of different events going on in Pittsburgh today just for the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday. And there are very many opportunities for young people to make a difference.
And I think talking about young people, one of the first people that comes to my mind, at least, is Malala and all the things that she's done, at least, from where she is as a young girl, someone that I probably look to myself being a 17-year-old girl. But even through the things that she's gone through, suppression, gender inequality, she's really been faced a lot of bias and prejudice for her gender, for where she lives. And I think even through all that, she's really displayed that she has the strength and compassion to make a change, similar to any of the people who were attending Dr. King's famous speech, or anybody, even like us, whatever, talking on the radio at a Streaming Justice webcast. I think anybody has the potential to make a difference, even people who are younger, teenagers, and I think a lot of people overlook us being younger kids, but I think everyone really has the ability to make a difference.
Right, I think a lot of kids today, I mean, everyone has off school today, it seems. I know for St. Clair does, and I mean, I think a lot of kids just see this as a day to stay home and catch up and relax, but it's not. It really is about making a difference, and that's why we're here today at Streaming Justice.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the youth movement to make a civil rights change is one of the most important movements that we have, because we're the next generation that's going to be affected by these movements. So the people who are out today making a difference, or at least even at home but thinking about it, I think that's very important.
I mean, in retrospect, Well, I was saying, in retrospect, we take a look at the civil rights movement back in Dr. King's time, and to us that seems sort of, it seems strange to us almost, because we've taken for granted a lot of the prejudices that no longer exist, and to us it doesn't seem as much of a difference as it probably would have been to someone living at that time. So for them, it must have been a really big thing to sort of break the status quo, as Liz mentioned, and to take that big leap of faith, which, I mean, it doesn't really seem like that as much of a big deal in retrospect, perhaps, but I think that's where it all stems from, changing the status quo and making a difference.
Hey, we shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Someday, darling, here in my heart, yeah, I do believe we shall overcome someday. We'll walk hand in hand.
Listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
All right, we're back. And to start off, we'd like to have your participation. One of our hosts, Liz, is actually going to be reading a poem called Ballad of Birmingham, which refers to the Birmingham bombings. So we'd like to have you call in or text us at 412-200-5975 with your feedback on the poem, as well as maybe some examples of how you've seen equality and civil rights in your own lives.
Sure. Thank you, Ananya. As Ananya said, I am going to be reading the poem Ballad of Birmingham by Dudley Randall. Thank you to my English teacher, Ms. Moeller, for sharing this poem in class one day. Mother dear, may I go downtown instead of out to play and march the streets of Birmingham in a freedom march today? No, baby, no, you may not go, for the dogs are fierce and wild, and clubs and hoses, guns and jails aren't good for a little child. But mother, I won't be alone. Other children will go with me and march the streets of Birmingham to make our country free. No, baby, no, you may not go, for I fear those guns will fire. But you may go to church instead and sing in the children's choir. She has combed and brushed her night dark hair in bathed rose petal suite, in drawn white gloves on her small brown hands, in white shoes on her feet. The mother smiled to know her child was in the sacred place. But that smile was the last smile to come upon her face. For when she heard the explosion, her eyes grew wet and wild. She raced through the streets of Birmingham, calling for her child. She clawed through the bits of brick, of glass and brick, then lifted out a shoe. Oh, here's the shoe my baby wore, but baby, where are you? Okay, so that poem refers to the 1963 church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama, and clearly the mother did not want her child to go to the Freedom March that day. Instead, she went to Sunday school at the church, and the church actually ended up getting bombed. Any reactions to that, Ananya or Arwen?
Well, I mean, I'm still getting goosebumps from hearing that poem. I think it's really powerful, especially from the perspective of a child who didn't really have any direct involvement, any vendettas with any of the people, but still she was subject to the harsh violence and mistreatment when she honestly didn't really deserve anything of the sort. She was just going to church to sing in the choir.
Right, it adds a child's face and a mother's face to the civil rights movement. Too much, I think, I mean, from my own experience, I've only read about the civil rights movement in books or watched a History Channel special now and then, and this poem, for me, really added a sort of personal identity to the civil rights movement and the Birmingham church bombing.
I agree. I think seeing how it can affect people, like Ananya said, that didn't personally have any malicious towards anyone, who just wanted to go to church, even if in this poem it was a girl who wanted to go to a freedom march and ended up not going. I think that taking this kind of idea to heart, it becomes easier if you look at the people who are innocent and affected negatively by it.
Exactly. And I think even if the young girl had gone to the freedom march, I mean, what's wrong with a peaceful protest in a freedom march? I mean, I think these people were acted against unfairly for just peaceful demonstrations. They did nothing wrong.
Yeah, definitely. And I think today, the idea of nonviolent protests is a big one that a lot of people talk about and still take to heart from what Martin Luther King said, and I think that's important to remember as well.
Right. Martin Luther King advocated a, quote, calm dignity to his followers, showing the power of peace. He even made outlines of specific rules for bus boycotts and protests that really emphasized nonviolence and not being aggressive and not bragging or boasting and overwhelmingly being humble.
I think especially with the Liz bringing up the nonviolence aspect of Dr. King's movement, I think that really reminded me of, well, one of Dr. King's own inspirations, Mahatma Gandhi from India, which at least to me sort of tugs at my heartstrings on a personal level because I'm of Indian origin. And so the Indian civil rights movement and the Indian British Raj occupation always sort of really gets to me on a personal level. And I think the basis for that was sort of similar to the American civil rights movement. There was a lot of racial inequality and a lot of civil rights movements, and there was a lot of unfair treatment and violence of people who weren't really directly involved. There were so many massacres of just innocent women and children, just like the Birmingham bombing in the Indian civil rights movement. So I think there are a lot of parallels throughout history, whether it's earlier than Dr. King, after than Dr. King, even in the news, if you go on CNN, you read stories of bombings and massacres, and I mean, it's saddening.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what certain conflicts going on in the world today would be like if there weren't violence, if they really took to heart Dr. King's lessons.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to think about. I mean, in his Principles of Nonviolence, Martin Luther King said that, you know, the universe is on the side of the justice, and I think that if people weren't violent, the need to take things as personally as people do and get as violent as people do and hurt people who are innocent, like in the poem, would essentially go away because everyone would be able to figure things out without hurting each other.
I mean, in all honesty, to some extent, I think violence is inevitable, at least the way human beings are, that there's always going to be some sort of conflict, some sort of disagreement, and I don't think you can ever truly eliminate violence. But I think it's more important to think of the people who were innocently harmed, like the children, the women, who really had no direct involvement. And I don't really think there's any such thing as justified violence, but I think if there is violence, that it's really... I think it's really especially depressing when it harms people who weren't even involved in the cause of the violence.
Yeah, definitely. When people who are innocent... I agree that violence can be inevitable, and I think the line that's being crossed, especially in that poem and in a lot of instances today, is that people who had no personal attack on anyone else are being severely harmed.
Right, I think we see that today, victims of genocide or discrimination, you know, it's children that are being affected, and mothers and people that have nothing to do with it, and they're sought after as victims.
And Silas bound in jail, had no money for to go their bail. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on. The very moment I thought I was lost, the dungeon shook and the chains fell off. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on. Only thing that we did wrong was staying in the wilderness too long. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on. The only thing that we did right was the day we begun to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Oh, sing it again. Hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on.
And Brother Martin was walking with me, and every step I heard liberty. Though he's fallen, come a million behind. Glory, hallelujah, gonna make it this time. No easy walk to freedom. No easy walk to freedom. Keep on walking and you shall be free. That's how we're gonna make history.
Across the ocean, the blood's running warm. I hear it coming, there's a thunder and storm. Just like we lived it, you know that it's true.
Nelson Mandela, now we're walking with you. No easy walk to freedom. No easy walk to freedom. Keep on walking and you shall be free. That's how we're gonna make history.
In our land,
not so long ago,
we lived the struggle, and that's how we know.
Abolished common freedom's call. Keep on walking in a pipeline we're full. No easy walk to freedom. No easy walk to freedom. Keep on.
That's how we're gonna change history. You and me.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. We're back with Streaming Justice. Arwen over here is going to share a poem, but before that, we'd love to have your participation. Please call or text us at 412-200-5975.
So I have a poem by Maya Angelou called Equality. You declare you see me dimly through a glass which will not shine, though I stand before you boldly, trim in rank and making time. You do not own to hear me faintly as a whisper out of range, while my drums beat out the message and the rhythms never change. Equality, and I will be free. Equality, and I will be free. You announce my ways are wanton, that I fly from man to man, but if I just shadow to you, could you ever understand? We have lived a painful history, we know the shameful past, but I keep on marching forward, and you keep on coming last. Equality, and I will be free. Equality, and I will be free. Take the blinders from your vision, take the padding from your ears, and confess you've heard me crying, and admit you've seen my tears. Hear the tempo so compelling, hear the blood throb through my veins. Yes, my drums are beating nightly, and the rhythms never change. Equality, and I will be free. Equality, and I will be free. So what are your thoughts about that?
Sure, I'd love to share my thoughts. Thanks, Arwen. I thought in that poem, Maya Angelou kind of was addressing someone who maybe didn't see that there was an issue of equality at hand. And I think that's a problem today. Too many people think that the issues of racism or marriage equality or gender equality are already solved, and they're not.
And I think it's interesting, especially given the speaker, that we sort of get like a double perspective, being in that she was a woman as well. And like everyone focuses a lot on like the racial civil rights movement, but an important thing to notice is that women actually got the right to vote a lot after people of African descent did, which I think is interesting because we see a lot of gender inequality as well, which is basically what our next segment is focusing on. Gender inequality, which honestly still is present in the 21st century, a lot of people don't really see it as much. It's still very much present in today's society.
Yeah, also on our segment, we are very lucky to be joined by Zainab Adisa, who was one of the hosts of the last segment. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I feel that people are still more naive today. A lot of people don't realize that there are still problems going on today, and I feel that that itself is a problem. And it needs to get out there more.
Yeah, I agree. I think the fact that Maya Angelou is the woman who wrote the poem, she's definitely an icon for not only women's rights, but civil rights in general. And so I think she's a very important person to think about when you think about fighting for equality in any aspect, because she did so much for so many people.
I think her simple use of poetry, too, as a sort of weapon, although it'd be nonviolent, so not really a weapon. Her use of poetry is very powerful. I think Dr. King would be a proponent of that. After all, he was very much a proponent of nonviolent protests. And I think simple things that are maybe unconventional, like poetry or even this radio segment today, really can combat inequality.
I think especially in the racial equality movement, one of the biggest milestones definitely would be the election of President Barack Obama, the first African-American president. And I look forward to seeing maybe in the upcoming elections the election of a woman as president, which I think would be a big step in the gender equality movement, especially in today's society.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we are definitely making progress in both, in a lot of civil rights places, but a lot of people think that progress means completion and that just because people, you know, are fighting for it and were fighting for it, that means that no one has to start anything new or make any new efforts, and that we can just kind of go off the efforts that other people like Maya Angelou and Martin Luther King Jr. did. And that's definitely a common misconception, but we are definitely graced with having the philosophies of these great people before us that we can use to kind of build our own.
I think Arwen actually brings up a really good point with talking about what progress means, and I think it really is a process. It's not some disease that can be eradicated like smallpox. It's all about understanding and learning to accept other people. And I don't think that's something that can ever completely be eliminated, because it's part of inherent human nature to judge and view other people and categorize them. But I think as society progresses, I think that we can eventually learn to become more and more accepting of other people, even if they're of different race, of a different religion, different sexual orientation. But I think what people often misunderstand is that it's something that after a certain time period is solved, but I really don't think there's ever any final solution, just increasing understanding of other people.
Right, and I think the status quo today is that it is solved, and it's not. And I think all we can do really is raise awareness of not only the issue itself, but the fact that it's not solved, through poems and sharing poems and being on this radio program today or attending one of the many events that's going on in Pittsburgh today.
And talking about the events today, if you're hearing any of the background noise, it's because that you're actually listening to the Hill Dance Academy from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is actually playing in the background across from us in the Children's Museum. So if there's any of the drumming or loud music, that's actually another celebration going on in honor of Martin Luther King Jr.
Also upstairs, the Children's Museum is having many festivities to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday, including another thing by SLB Radio where called King for a Day, where children are going up to the podium and reading a piece of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah, I think it's especially great to see young people being exposed to these kinds of philosophies like Martin Luther King Jr. and Maya Angelou. A lot of that is explored in schools and places like the Children's Museum. And I think that's definitely very important, because you can't expect to raise a generation of people who are going to be willing to fight for equality if they aren't aware that it can be done.
Right, and I'm glad this path isn't just being taken in school through history classes and whatnot. I when I came here today, I struggled to find a parking spot, and I was kind of happy about that, you know. I think it's great that parents are bringing their kids out to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday and raise awareness about his causes.
Yeah, I think it really makes me happy, actually, to see so many young children really accepting of other people at such a young age, because I think there's a lot to be said for indoctrination and influence of older generations, parents especially, and I think the more we progress, it has to come with the newer generations, the younger children. So maybe one day when Liz Arwin and I are much older, maybe there'll be some of the kids we see here hosting a similar show like Streaming Justice, talking about equality and civil rights in their time period. And I think it really makes me hopeful to see so many young children really taking a step forward like this.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that kids are starting young, because that's really, you need to plant the seed that kids are starting young. And so I think it's a really good idea to get kids involved and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, definitely. And to bring it back to gender equality, it's good to see things that aren't necessarily just about Martin Luther King or Maya Angelou, but about advocating in general, because having an education about the fact that there are still other civil rights movements happening are definitely very important.
So we actually did have someone send us a text message in regards to our poem and our discussion we were having about civil rights, and their question is, do you feel that more people are naive about what's going on today or back in the past? Also, how do you feel people can get this message across? So I think naivety, at least to me, is something that has been present throughout history, whether it's with people around Dr. King's time or even people today. I think people are just as equally naive in understanding differences among people and prejudices, but I think a common misconception that I see today especially is that people seem to think that these issues are gone, that they're like they've all been solved, so to speak, and I think that's really not the case.
Right, so as Ananya was saying, people are naive, but perhaps in a different way. Maybe back in the 1960s, people truly were just prejudiced against African Americans. But today, maybe they still are, but they aren't aware of it. And perhaps that might be worse.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the level of understanding is probably the same, but it's definitely in a different kind of viewpoint. In the 1960s, it was a new idea to have a kind of rights activist, and here today it's kind of different. People think that rights activists are no longer necessary. So I agree with Elizabeth in saying that maybe people just aren't aware of their prejudices today, and in the 1960s, they were not aware because it just hadn't been brought up yet.
So in response to the question that we got, I think people are just as equally naive, both now as they were in Dr. King's time, but I think there's a general misconception in equality in that it's been fixed nowadays, where it really hasn't. And also, I would say there's some merit to the fact that people maybe don't want to really open their eyes and realize that this is still going on, that some people maybe want to have a, like, turn a blind eye to it and assume that it's all being taken care of. But in reality, we see it everywhere. Every day, everywhere you go, there's always going to be some sort of bias and prejudice.
Yeah, a quote from Martin Luther King was, "Nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity," which I think definitely sums that up a bit.
Right, and I even think that on a unconscious level, people are prejudiced. I mean, without thinking, you can be. And it's very easy for some people to do that without realization of that. So today on Martin Luther King Day, try to step back, take a look at yourself and say, is that me, maybe?
So I think to touch on the second part of the text message we replied, which was about how do people get the message across to others? So would anyone like to maybe share any ideas or what we think about that?
Well, I think Martin Luther King Day itself is a way to get ideas across. And I know in my elementary school, we had kids, like, really young in kindergarten doing things for celebrating him or in ways, like, in tribute to him. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, in a little bit, we'll talk more about it, but I think the social media of today is a very, very powerful tool that, unfortunately, Martin Luther King did not have the ability to use as much as we do today. But ideas can spread a lot easier today than they could in the 1960s.
Right. If you go on Twitter today, you'll see in the trending section, like, hashtag MLK Day or hashtag MLK Day 2014. So it's happening. It's going on. And that's great.
I mean, I think especially there's a lot to be said with the power of music, of media. I mean, just look around us at the Children's Museum. We have the music playing behind us. I mean, there are events all around Pittsburgh. There's the 10th annual Martin Luther King Jr. Blood Drive for Life at the Hill District. I mean, there's so many opportunities to really get the message across in a multitude of ways. And I mean, there's nothing that's more evident of that than today itself, seeing all the events going around, going on around Pittsburgh today. So.
And even this broadcast itself. I mean, this is media, and we're sharing our ideas about it. And I think that's very important.
Right. Another thing not to forget, though, is today is a day about Martin Luther King, but don't forget about his message the rest of the year, you know?
No, I think Liz brings up a good point, that sometimes it needs something to really slap us in the face, like having a national holiday for us to think about equality and rights. But I think it's something that we should try to incorporate into everyday life, try to really make sure the message sticks with us so we can use it to change how we are as a person, how we treat other people, how we act towards others, even our first reaction or instinct about other people. I think the real part of change stems from the individual and making a difference within yourself. And so maybe it's not January the 20th, maybe it's the other 364 days, that you sort of incorporate this into your own life.
Yeah, definitely. I think that even though we have this great day, you know, it's imperative that you remember every day of the year that these philosophies exist, and that they're very important.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Is how many years can a mountain exist before it's washed to the sea? And how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free?
free. And how many times can a man turn his head, pretending he just doesn't see? Yeah, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Hey, how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? And how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? How many dead will it take till he knows that too many people have died? Hey, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Oh, the answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, the answer is blowing in the wind. So the answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Blowing in the wind.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
And we're back. And if you're joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. If you like what you're hearing, please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org.
Also, we'd love to have your participation. Please give us a call or text us at 412-200-5975.
Yeah, so like we mentioned a bit earlier, we think that social media is very important in how we view civil rights today, and unfortunately Martin Luther King Jr. did not have as much of it as we do today, and that's unfortunate, but how can we use it today to help progress this?
Right. The civil rights movement back in the 1960s was very much a grassroots movement, and I think we can see similar movements today that are even stronger because of the power of Twitter and Facebook and even just simple online news and the power to share stories so quickly.
I mean, there's so many websites right now, like amnesty.org, change.org, which are all about really sharing causes, sharing stories, and working together to make an impact, which I think is something that, as Arwin mentioned, Dr. King wasn't fortunate enough to have at his time. But I think that's really our strength nowadays, that we can use something like that to really go forward into the future with the power to make a difference and collaborate to universally make change in what we believe and what we consider other people.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's also, I totally agree, and I think there's also strength that Martin Luther King found in not having that kind of access. I mean, he said, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." And I think that makes the accomplishments that Martin Luther King made even more impressive, that he made them without the comforts and convenience, as he said, of social media that we have today.
Yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
Sometimes I think that today in specific movements, it's easy to hide behind the mask of social media and tweet something aggressive or Facebook someone a nasty message. And, you know, Dr. King was very much an advocate of nonviolence and being very humble. So I don't know how he would take this whole social media world and the good and bad powers it has.
I mean, there are two sides to the argument. On one hand, social media definitely makes causes like this much more accessible, makes it much more widespread, that more people get to have a say, get to have an impact. But on the other hand, like Liz was saying, it becomes not laziness, so to speak, but almost like a much easier, convenient way of comfort to react to situations like this. For example, if there's something that I see, I can share the tweet or I can post the Facebook post just from the comfort of my own bedroom. But in regards to something like Dr. King's famous speech, if you think about all the thousands of people that actually went to the Washington Monument to hear this man speak, some people who traveled from far away, I think that really is something important to consider about in contrasting the civil rights movement of his time to the one of our time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it's not to say that people aren't trying hard today, but that it's easier to not have to. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing.
So we actually have a question from one of our listeners, which Liz is going to read out.
Right. One of our listeners asked the question, was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was his social media the black church at the time? What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, in comparison or as a metaphor, I guess you could say that. So I guess social media back then could have been a church or a book or writing letters to your friends, but because it's just a wide range. So I guess you could say that his church was his social media of the time in an interesting kind of way.
I mean, I think social media, especially for me, it's all about who you connect with, who you want to talk to, who you want to interact with. And for someone in Dr. King's time, I think maybe for him, it was the black church. It was his way of connecting with his followers, his friends, his family, and really sharing what he believed with the people around him. I mean, obviously, he didn't have the convenience of Facebook, where in an instant I can message someone halfway across the world. But for him, he had his local community, his local support group, which was his social media, so to speak.
Yeah, and in a way, that's stronger than what we have today. And of course, we do have a lot of liberties that he didn't with our aspects. But I mean, having people that are close to you physically and, you know, in emotional ways can be very powerful because you can have a much more physical relationship with the rights activists. But so I think both now and then we have a lot of liberties that they probably took for granted and that we take for granted today.
Right. Do you guys think, though, that maybe social media today takes away from the power of social movements? Like, people hide behind it too much, and instead of getting out there and being active in peaceful protests or making active change, they just hide behind their iPhone or a computer?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, like, for example, I mentioned amnesty.org earlier. I get emails from them a lot, and they ask me to, like, sign online petitions, which, of course, I never hesitate. It's just a click of the button, typing my name out, clicking send. But if some of those people involved in those scenarios, if they were to, say, show up at my door and say, will you stand with me at this protest tomorrow at the local town hall, would I say yes? And the answer is I'm really not sure, because it's so easy, to some extent, to just hide behind social media and, yeah, we take a role in what's going on around us, but not really to the extent that Dr. King's followers did in his time.
I mean, I agree, but I think that it doesn't necessarily take away from the power. I mean, it does in some ways, but I think it definitely changes what it means to be a rights activist. You know, in its foundation, it was, in Martin Luther King's day, literally going out and putting yourself and your life on the line to make a statement. And in this day and age, it's certainly easier to be a rights activist because you can be more anonymous or, you know, and it's easier. And I think that that does take away from some of the physicality of it, but I don't know if it takes away from the power. I think it just changes what it means to be an activist for your rights.
Yeah, things have definitely changed for our generation. It's two different time periods, I guess, and so during that time period, maybe going out and protesting was that thing, but also social media can be just as powerful as going out there and doing things. I know a lot of people who, they use their social media in a way, because even if they are frightened, then they still have a way to get their voices out, or they use it, and then social media goes a long way. It goes from person to person to person, so.
Yeah, I think it makes extending a message that you have a lot easier than it was in the time before.
Right, and I think we've also today seen instances where both have been combined, both social media and active protests have been combined, specifically in the Middle East. I remember about in the summer of 2011, like people were calling the revolutions in the Middle East the Twitter revolutions, but really without the people themselves, being active in protests and standing up for their beliefs, there would be no revolution. Twitter didn't make that happen. It was the people themselves.
I agree with Liz. I think even though arguably there's a lot less at stake for someone, the actual 140 characters in a tweet mean nothing if there's not a soul, a human being standing behind that.
Yeah, and I think if anything, you know, it makes it in some ways more powerful because like the poem we read before, you know, it was dangerous to activate for your rights at times. It was physically, you know, it put you at risk. And I think now people have more freedom, especially, you know, the youth who can now do this without the danger of being physically harmed. And I think that's a great thing because you can put your opinion out there without being scared of being hurt.
I mean, that being said, I think we really need to take a look at this at a global scale, too. I mean, all of us sitting here, we're not really afraid of any of this direct violence or directly affecting us. We can sort of comfortably take a look at this from a different perspective. But for some of the people, for example, like Liz mentioned, the Middle East, a lot of those people don't have the options that we have with social media, crowdfunding, online petitions. A lot of them, if they want to gain their own rights, they literally have to get out of their house and make a change. Like with the example of Malala we mentioned earlier, that there's a lot more at risk for people like them compared to people like us.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it depends on where you're at, maybe in the world, and I don't think it should depend on where you're at, but it definitely does in this new social era of things being free and justice and the Constitution and all that.
So we have under 2 minutes left, so I think we're probably just going to wrap this up and review. I mean, our segment basically focused on the different types of inequality and prejudices, whether it's gender, race, and then even the use of social media in today's world and compared to some of the resources available to Dr. King in his own time period and how those can be used to combat social inequality.
Yeah, one of the big ideas I think we collectively want to leave you with is how are his Martin Luther King Jr.'s ideas being used in society today and how can we harness their power?
Because, yeah, I mean, in today's world, we have so much that we've been given, so many opportunities, and I think the important thing is to use those and try to incorporate those things into your life to not only make a change today on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, but on every other day of your life and make a difference in other people's lives as well.
To end, I'm Elizabeth Vargo of Upper St. Clair High School.
I'm Ananya Cletus. I'm also at Upper St. Clair High School.
I'm Arwen Kozak, and I'm at Pittsburgh Kappa.
I'm Zaina Badisa, and I'm also at Pittsburgh Kappa.
Show me a prison, show me a jail, show me a prison man whose face is growing pale, and I'll show you a young man with many reasons why, and there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley, show me a train, show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain, and I'll show you a young man with many reasons why, and there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me the whiskey that stains on the floor. Show me a drunken man as he stumbles out the door. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me a country where the bombs had to fall. Show me the ruins of the buildings once so tall. And I'll show you a young land with so many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I.
Well, everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know.
What freedom is.
What freedom is.
And everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know.
Yes, everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know.
Justice is.
What justice is.
So everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know.
Yes, everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know.
What friendship is.
What friendship is.
And everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know.
Yes, everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know. Everybody ought to know.
What happiness is.
What happiness is.
Well, everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know.
Yes, everybody ought to know.
Everybody ought to know.
Yes, everybody ought to know. What freedom is.
What freedom is.